Tiene entendido que están bastante rodeadas los pocos que han quedado en este centro histórico y que los que han huido han ido para la parte del sur, que es donde todavía tienen algunas postas y las controlan. Todo esto es parte de una ofensiva que lanzó el ejército en noviembre y que se calcula que ya todo lo que es Alepo Oriental lo controla. Las cifras son distintas, pero entre un 65 y un 80% de control territorial ya tiene el ejército.
El politólogo Eduardo Luque Guerrero dice estar seguro que la oposición armada de Siria está siendo diezmada por la embestida del ejército de Bashar al-Assad.
Sin duda alguna, la situación para los denominados rebeldes, que es un operativo que desde luego no les caracteriza, no les accionó ninguno, son meros grupos terroristas, es en este momento muy desesperada. La pérdida del barrio antiguo, que es colindante con el gran castillo de Alepo, en manos del ejército desde el comienzo de la guerra, va a cortar una vez más la zona que controlaban los grupos terroristas, aislándolos todavía más y seccionándolos en pequeños grupos para que el ejército sirio pueda ir aniquilándolos uno a uno. También hay rumores de que se está intentando llegar a un acuerdo de entrega de zonas territoriales a cambio de la salida de estos terroristas y que así evitarían su propia aniquilación. Pero evidentemente va a influir enormemente la situación de Alepo en la situación del conjunto del territorio. Hay en este momento tres puntos todavía al margen de Alepo que están en pugna muy importantes: la zona de Idlib, que está hacia el oeste de Alepo, hacia el noroeste, la capital de los grupos yihadistas que ellos han autoproclamado como la capital, que es Al-Raqqa, que será también objetivo muy pronto del ejército sirio, y otros que están al sur, como Deir al-Zor, que también está parcialmente conquistada por los grupos terroristas, pero que no han podido tomarla en su totalidad. Es una ciudad cercada desde hace 4 años, donde el ejército sirio resiste con enorme fiereza, ¿no? Aquello de Alepo va a influir enormemente en la moral y en la capacidad de resistencia de los grupos terroristas, e incluso en Turquía, que ya sabemos que no va a conquistar, no va a penetrar más allá de la zona que controla en el norte de Siria, tal como amenazó hace unos días el señor Erdogan en uno de sus cambios de posición tan frecuentes en él. Advirtió que ellos iban a deponer al presidente al-Assad. La intervención de Rusia les obligó a rectificar, y hoy ya dicen que en absoluto ellos van a deponer al presidente al-Assad y que incluso no conquistarán las ciudades del norte de Alepo que ellos pretendían conquistar para extender su imagen de imperio otomano, aunque fuera reducido.
En noticias relacionadas, la coalición militar que opera en territorio iraquí ya anunció su disposición de seguir ocupando el país que años atrás invadiera, alegando la presencia de armas de destrucción masiva. Victoria Aramburu viene con más detalles.
Las Fuerzas Armadas de Estados Unidos y sus aliados van a seguir presentes en Irak, incluso después de una hipotética derrota del autoproclamado Estado Islámico. Lo anunció el propio comandante norteamericano del operativo en la ciudad iraquí de Mosul, el teniente general Stephen Townsend. El alto mando explica que el objetivo es prevenir el surgimiento de nuevos grupos yihadistas. Señaló también que la ofensiva contra el Daesh, llevada a cabo por la coalición que lidera Washington, podría durar 2 meses más. El comandante reconoció que el ejército iraquí hizo grandes avances en los últimos 2 años en cuanto a la liberación de zonas del país ocupadas por terroristas. El pasado mes de octubre, Fuerzas Armadas iraquíes y milicias kurdas emprendieron el operativo militar para recuperar la ciudad de Mosul. Vamos a hablar sobre este asunto con la analista internacional Laila Tejeldín, en directo. En principio, preguntarte: desde la alianza liderada por Washington aseguran que las fuerzas de la coalición y de Estados Unidos van a seguir en Irak tras finalizar la ofensiva. Según lo afirman, lo harían para prevenir que aparezcan estos nuevos grupos extremistas. ¿De qué forma van a continuar presentes en este país árabe? Y desde tu punto de vista, ¿se puede hablar de una invasión de alguna u otra forma?
Mira, desde el año 2003... Irak se encuentra sumida en una gran invasión y lo estamos viendo de pasar a ser un país seguro a uno inseguro gracias a esos falsos argumentos dados por Estados Unidos de armamentos de destrucción masiva que nunca existieron. Hoy el terrorismo sirve a los intereses de Estados Unidos para mantener su invasión en territorio iraquí. Hoy el terrorismo justifica la expansión militar mundial de Estados Unidos en el mundo y lo estamos viendo. Estados Unidos es el principal elemento, el principal actor de la formación de estos grupos terroristas, y hay quien menos le interesa que estos grupos desaparezcan, porque justamente son estos grupos los que justifican su acción y su permanencia en los territorios y también las tomas de sus riquezas, como lo hemos visto en Irak, y también vemos que se ha querido extender al territorio sirio.
Ahora, Leila, uno de los puntos más cuestionables, más sensibles, ¿no?, de esta operación tiene que ver con la población civil que ha quedado atrapada en la ciudad de Mosul. ¿Hasta qué punto se puede garantizar la seguridad de estas personas y cuál sería su, bueno, condición en caso de que esta ofensiva se extienda?
Mira, la situación en Mosul de la población civil, ya se está hablando al respecto, es una condición de total inseguridad donde no se está tomando en cuenta ninguna de las normas para la protección de estos civiles. Se habla que las bajas son totalmente, bueno, desastrosas que existen, donde también esta coalición ataca directamente a la población civil y no tiene en consideración nada que tenga que ver con su protección. Incluso se habla de comparación de las víctimas de los terroristas en Siria respecto a la víctima de la coalición estadounidense en Irak, y prácticamente la coalición estadounidense está superando a los propios terroristas en Siria. Es una situación que hay que ver y que hay que llamar la atención de Estados Unidos, por cuanto está violando el derecho y la seguridad de la población civil que está inmersa e inmiscuida en un conflicto armado que siempre tenemos que recordar al mundo que tiene un origen, y ese origen lo llevó y lo originó propiamente dicho Estados Unidos de América.
En Brasil, el Supremo Tribunal Federal falló a favor de mantener en el cargo al presidente del Senado, Renan Calheiros. Adriana Robreño amplía la información.
Esta fue una votación que se esperaba incluso que durara mucho más, que terminara incluso entrada ya la noche. Finalmente, 6 magistrados votaron a favor de que Renan Calheiros se mantuviera en la presidencia del Senado, pero que no asumiera, no estuviera en la línea sucesora para asumir la presidencia de la República en caso hipotético que Michelle Temer o el presidente de la Cámara, Rodrigo Maia, no pudieran hacerlo. Por tanto, él continúa como presidente del Senado. Ahora, esto ha sido toda una situación que desde el día de ayer ha generado una gran confusión aquí en Brasilia y sobre todo en el Senado. Ya hay algunas reacciones. La mayoría de los senadores que hemos tenido la oportunidad de escuchar han hablado de que esta es una decisión del Supremo Tribunal Federal que debe ser respetada. Sin embargo, hay uno de los senadores, Randolph Rodríguez, del Partido Redes, que menciona que a pesar de que es una decisión del Supremo, que él también la va a respetar como el resto de los senadores, no coincide, no está de acuerdo, considera que esto hiera la democracia, una democracia que aquí en Brasil ya es débil desde que este propio parlamento aprobó el golpe contra la presidenta Dilma Rousseff. Supremo Tribunal Federal, de uno de sus ministros en el día de ayer de separar a Renan Calheiros del cargo, ha sido interpretada como una injerencia del Poder Judicial sobre el Poder Legislativo, y a su vez el hecho de que en el día de ayer la mesa directiva del Senado decidiera no acatar esa decisión también ha sido interpretada como un golpe a la democracia. En fin, es una situación sobre la otra que se ha ido generando y que ha conllevado a una fragilidad institucional y a una crisis institucional, como ha sido denominada por los especialistas, lo que está sucediendo aquí en Brasil. En estos momentos está toda la prensa reunida aquí donde yo me encuentro, en el Senado Federal, esperando las reacciones, las palabras de el presidente del Senado, Renan Calheiros, que es, a fin de cuentas, quien estaba en el centro de esta situación de los últimos días. Las votaciones que estaban previstas ya para este último mes del año aquí en Brasil y que estaban siendo impulsadas por el presidente del Senado, Renan Calheiros, y que eran un punto de apoyo muy fuerte para Michelle Temer y su gobierno. Ellos tenían total respaldo de Renan Calheiros y ante la posibilidad de que él ya no estuviera al frente de esta institución legislativa. Eso preocupó mucho al gobierno, pues para la próxima semana ya está prevista la votación de la propuesta de enmienda constitucional que limita el presupuesto público por 20 años.
Y así concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. En nombre de Toshley y de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Of Free Radio Santa Cruz. We are reaching out for a new antenna location. Our current host is losing their house to the rotten scum banks. So we need a small space for our transmitter and computer box, about 2 feet by 2 feet, and a tree for the antenna where it sits hardly noticeable. We also have a tower for the antenna if you do not have a tall tree. It uses about 100 watts of power, about the same as a bright light bulb, and an internet connection. The ideal location would be, let's say, between West Side and 41st Avenue. Would you like to help? We can pay in exchange for your troubles. Please contact us. Write an email to FRSC at freakradio.org or send an email to FRSC. Radio Notes 811-7-3-4. Or, even better, call us during a live show at 831-427-3772. Help us out. Dear friends of Free Radio Santa Cruz, we are reaching out for a new antenna location. Our current host is losing their house to the rotten scum banks. So we need a small space for our transmitter and computer box, about 2 feet by 2 feet, and a tree for the antenna where it sits hardly noticeable. We also have a tower for the antenna if you do not have a tall tree. It uses about 100 watts of power, about the same as a bright light bulb, and an internet connection. The ideal location would be, let's say, between West Side and 41st Avenue. Would you like to help? We can pay in exchange for your troubles. Please contact us. Even better, call us during a live show at 831-427-3772. Help us out.
And welcome to a rainy Thursday night. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, or at least the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz. And this is one of your favorite free radio broadcasters struggling with the equipment here. We have some strange doings with the studio computer, but there's nothing new with that. And at least there's actually something a little new. It's kind of peculiarly playing two things at once, but I can't really say why. All I can say is that today is December 8th, And this is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Be with you for 2 hours, expecting to get in touch with Berkeley to find out what's happening with the protest homeless encampment that's been struggling on for the last 2 months up there. The Poor Tour, or First They Came for the Homeless, as they alternately call themselves. And also lots of street interviews and catch-ups on what's been happening outside along Pacific Avenue and here and there around the town. Call-in number here is 427-3772, 427-FRSC, and I will be keeping an eye on the phone, and I'll even make sure the ringer is on so that you can reach me if you wish. Though people haven't been doing too much of it lately, Free Radio, even the stream of Free Radio, and we're not broadcasting, as you kind of may have gathered from that somewhat garbled last public service announcement message from one of our broadcasters, we're looking for a transmitter site to put up the transmitter that we had to take down a couple weeks ago. And we need your help, of course. If you can find a location, a tree, a second story, well, everything you heard described, anything you heard described, get in touch. Either give me a call. My number is 423-4833, and I'll pass it on to the folks. Or go to the freakradio.org website and pass on the information there, which is where you probably are, at least in theory, if you're listening to this at all and you're not listening to it on archive. These shows are archived, by the way, these shows being my shows. Shows concerned mainly with civil rights on the streets and local politics. And they're archived at huffsantacruz.org, H-U-F-F Santa Cruz. It's all small letters, one word. And that's shows going back, decades now. But interesting historically, if you like to follow old times and how they are hauntingly familiar in comparison with new times, but also one can learn something about the new times by looking at the past, I think, too. So, why don't we begin with a little music? Give me a chance to sort of set up here the best I can and pull out my voluminous collection of newspapers, some of which I'd actually might read tonight. That's a possibility. And again, you should consider calling in if you have some thoughts on, well, the most obvious issues. Although, in a way, I think it's kind of been said, but maybe you have some new experiences you've had with our local police, security guards that are paid to harass and drive away homeless people. The Rangers, who are, or were, I'm not sure if they're still doing it. I assume they are, but maybe not, stalking Pacific Avenue and the levee. These are all concerns of those of us who would like to see the police state eliminated from and certainly not further expanded in our town. So that's often a subject of mine. And I'm afraid, oh dear, looks like I have to make a few adjustments here. I guess what I'm going to begin with are some interviews, because due to technical difficulties, we don't have access to music here in the studio, or at least I don't at the moment. So you've got to make your own kind of music, as Mama Cass used to say 4 decades ago. And I'll see what I can do about at least making some noise. Here's a little tiny piece of music from Pacific Avenue, and let's go with that. About 3:15 down on Pacific Avenue on a Sunday, overcast, getting chilly, listening to some music in front of Sports Extreme.
Yep.
I'll see what I can do about at least making. Brief music, actually. Now let's check out a few interviews here. This is a piece of interaction that happened about 4 days ago outside of Union Grove Music. That's a store that is going out of business. It's been there for 4 decades, or around town for 4 decades, selling musical instruments. It also is right across from the Metro, and it's one of the first places, perhaps the second, that a change-making machine was put in. These are the now meaningless change-making machines that give out dollar coins that you can't use in the parking meters. At least I haven't yet been able to use them. Maybe I'm just not pushing hard enough on the coins. I don't know. Or reading the small print. Originally, these machines gave out quarters and other change that you could use when you're in your parking meters. But they were really designed, it seems, maybe we're being a little conspiracy-minded here. I don't think so, particularly considering the location of the machines, sort of quickly following where congregations of young people were gathering 10, 20, 25 years ago. There's one of the first change machines was right across from the transit center at the corner of the street that intersects with the transit center and Pacific Avenue, and that was right next to Union Grove Music, which is... let's interrupt this thought to see who's on the phone. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Carol Denny calling in.
Hey, Carol, are you... I take it you haven't been listening to our show.
No, I have not. What did I miss?
Nothing, actually. You are the star, so I'm glad you called in. I should introduce you. This is one I call Cornerstone Carol Denny, author, singer, troublemaker, activist.
Of which I am very proud.
Indeed, yes. As we all are, or some of us anyway. And you've been, of course, on the show before, talking about, well, I guess you talked about the change in Berkeley politics, maybe.
Well, maybe is right, yeah.
And the work of activists in struggling to fight, essentially cut off of services via bureaucratic, constipation at the hub, which prompted a most recent protest, which Dan McMullen has talked about on Free Radio.
Good, yeah.
And then you've talked about more how to move from place to place. First they came for the homeless is the name of the group that was involved, and then it was, I guess, either rechristened or also christened the Poor Tour.
The Poor Tour, that's right.
And it's talked about in the newspaper Street Spirit, which you often write for.
Yes, I'm the human rights editor at present.
Oh, excellent. So you talked, I think we talked on the air, or perhaps we talked on the phone about the most recent betrayal, or what appeared to be a possible betrayal or preemptive action by the police, even after the arrival of the great new liberal progressives headed by the mayor, whose name I can never properly pronounce.
Arreguin.
Thank you.
Jesse Arreguin is the brand new mayor, and the night before his inauguration, or the day of his inauguration, I guess it was, he ran around telling people that the raids on the homeless camps were over. And, of course, that very morning there was another raid. So,
Carol, why should we care about these raids on homeless camps? Why don't these people just get into shelter and stop bothering the rest of us outside?
Indeed. Like, why don't they just get into shelter or go home, all of them? Well, here in Berkeley, it's really the same sleight of hand has been going on for 30 years where we don't have enough shelter. And what will often happen after you find yourself evicted is if you do need instantaneous shelter, they'll find you some in Richmond, at which point you're a Richmond citizen and you're no longer going to qualify for anything that comes up in the city of Berkeley. So people find themselves put on buses home, as it were, if they can unearth any relatives who will have you, or else farmed out to shelters and places with a little more generosity of shelter than we have. We've had the same 240 shelter beds for the entire tenure of Lonnie Hancock and Tom Bates, who took turns being mayor and are married. So for 30 years, that same 240 beds has tried to accommodate about between 800 and over 1,000 people.
And so most folks, I take it, even in the rain, is it raining up there now?
It is raining. Rained all day. We got a group, well, the Poor Tour is now almost where it started, near the what they call the hub, this navigation. It's not a navigation center. They're using, they've got five different euphemisms for this place that's supposed to help homeless and poor people, but it doesn't offer shelter, and it doesn't offer food, and it does, whatever the services are, seem to be like a piece of paper that tells you all the meals you missed that day. So it's, what's funny, I guess, in a very black way to me, is that, you know, you have to really be dialed into homelessness and be homeless to find out just how little they're actually offering. And the majority, the last paper that they produced on the way they spend money on homelessness, of which they're very proud, like $17 million, but a good half of that is police raids and the other half is the salaries of the people who make their living from, you know, tisking over these issues.
And is there, I understand, at least more so than in Santa Cruz, there are at least a number of activists such as yourself, Dan Mulligan, Michelle, and others who are writing about it, more than that, actively protesting or supporting protesters.
Yeah, we are protesting pretty consistently, writing consistently, and writing poems, songs, and doing street action. So we also, of course, were able to unseat some of the more conservative members of our city council and replace them with people who are ostensibly more radical, more liberal, but we're going to find out more about that on Tuesday. Because I got to say, even though, you know, people make speeches about how they're going to be more compassionate, that's the word you hear a lot from liberals about homelessness and regional planning issues, the real way it'll play out on a city council, as you know well, in the city of Santa Cruz, can look like more of the same. So they don't have Tom Bates to hide behind anymore. They don't have the city council majority of conservatives to hide behind anymore. And I'm wondering, I'm probably sounding very cynical in wondering whether or not the people who claim they just don't have the votes will step out and honestly vote for something that might make them unpopular in their district with people who just want to boot the homeless and don't really care what happens to
them. You know, I know in Santa Cruz, Carol, it's always seemed to me to be the case, in fact, I think it is the case, that it isn't the city council at all that makes a lot of these decisions. In theory, they could, but actually it's the longtime staff, much more highly paid than the city council, such as the city manager, police chief, heads of parks and rec, planning department, all these big, you know, panjan drums who really have their own agenda, or seem to, and the city council largely rubber stamps that stuff. Is it different in Berkeley? What's happening up there?
It's the same model, a strong city manager model, but don't kid yourself. If you had the will on your city council, and if we have the will on ours, they can give direction to their staff.
Have they ever had the will in Berkeley to do that, in your recollection?
On this coming Tuesday, the 13th of December, we will find out whether or not they will, and I think they will, at least rescind the two-square-foot law, which means that if you have more than 2 square feet of belongings with you, you are in violation of the law. That is so extreme, and it's so obviously pointed at people who have to carry everything they own with them, that we think they will rescind that law. I have to say, as much as I know they're going to sort of wave their hands in the air and dance at having this overwhelmingly prejudicial law rescinded, you know, it's not enough. They are going to leave firmly in place a raft of other anti-homeless laws, laws that criminalize sleeping in your car, for instance, which just makes no sense. That's the safest place to be if you do have a vehicle rather than trying to sleep outside. But they haven't done that. And I got an indication earlier today by calling one of the most liberal guys on the council, Chris Worthington. Called him up and I said, you know, I don't know if you ever thought about this, but right behind City Hall there's a parking lot for maybe 35 cars. Boot those cars. Turn that into what we need immediately, which is just a safe place to be for people who have cars and can park them and live in them or next to them, and for people who have tents and need a safe place that is close to the bathrooms there, because that city hall was built with access to bathrooms on the outside. So he very studiously said nothing. He didn't say, sounds like a great idea. He didn't say, sounds like a terrible idea. He said nothing because he knows I'm a reporter. And I said, look, Chris, off the record, I mean, it's everything you need. It's close to the Y. It's close to the library. It's close to, you know, this and that opportunity to get a hot meal. It's centrally located, close to transit. I mean, let's do something. And he just, again, you couldn't believe the silence. So what I think is going on is all of a sudden a reshuffling of everybody's backbone. People who have suddenly no political cover, who used to point at Mayor Tom Bates and blame him, now are not too sure how it's going to shake out. So they'll do the obvious stuff, is my point. But we'll see if they'll do the things that really need done.
Well, let me go back
to make sure people are protected.
Carol, let me go back to this. I really asked you about the past. Has the, you know, the city council ever taken things into its own hands with respect to reverse? First of all, is the city manager, in your mind, an influential position in specifically creating and maintaining anti-homeless laws? And then, if he or she is, has the council in the past ever take action of a meaningful sort to stop this or take advances beyond this? I mean, you know, we...
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Tell me about
that. And my favorite example is after Reagan was elected president, this is way back when, but we had Gus Newport as mayor. When people tore down the parking, I think this was in 78, the University of California decided to move on People's Park and put a parking lot, of all things, where there had been a muddy, kind of a people's parking lot in the West End. It was just called the West End then. And so, you know, we took a look at it and were annoyed with it, those of us who lived on South Side. And then it just began to be disassembled day by day. Somebody tore out the little teeth that kill your tires if you go in. The university turned it into a fee lot, and suddenly the arm was gone, and there were people handing out pickaxes to tear up the asphalt. And as this happened, the police began to gather, and Gus Newport, the mayor, walked the perimeter, and I mean, he did that every day, walked the perimeter, told the cops, well, you're welcome to be here, realized that there's potentially criminal activity going on, but don't set one foot in that park. Because he knew if they did, that people would fight back for the park, and then there'd be, you know, a mess. People would get hurt. And he decided that, you know, the University of California's asphalt wasn't worth it, and he let it happen. So I always think about that as a really good example of the higher ground. That was the higher ground that day. And Gus Newport, at first I wasn't sure what he was doing. And then I walked with him. And he'd go up to each officer and say, hey, you know, Officer Jones, how you doing tonight? And make a little small talk. And then make it clear, you're fine standing right where you are. I don't want to see you take three steps in there. There's a medical emergency. We'll send in the fire trucks. Don't worry, but absolutely don't interfere with what's going on.
Well, that, you know, that, of course...
In other words, don't let the staff... Don't give credit to the staff.
Right.
But what is clearly a directive that comes from a combination of the mayor and the city council.
True. It's inspiring to hear, and I hadn't heard that story before. But, of course, there are a couple of... that was 40 years ago, and the issue, I guess... I haven't heard of you having an active mayor since in that time. And also the activists who were engaging in criminal behavior of a positive kind, destroying you know, a paved over people's situation that the people reclaimed. I mean, that actually, I regard that as the opposite of criminal, but that's obviously not how the police and the authorities could view it. And of course, then you and I were involved a decade later and a little bit more in resisting People's Park volleyball courts and the attempt to, you know, destroy the stage and do other things there. Somewhat successfully, I'd say, not entirely, but, you know, somewhat.
That's right.
But these were mass movements that happened, or at least somewhat massy movements. I mean,
well, they're mass movements, but all mass movements, most mass movements, certainly in the city of Berkeley, are, you know, occasionally mass, but mostly it's a small group of influential people who work tirelessly and consistently to make sure that people are educated enough about an issue such that they can come together at the crucial moments, like at the voting booth, that's always a good one, and then at other moments, too, where pressure needs to be brought on a city council.
Like first they came for the homeless, perhaps.
Like first they came for the homeless, like your sleep-in group. That sleep-in group, you may think of it as unsuccessful, but I'll tell you, it's important. It's important to illustrate to the citizenry of Santa Cruz, snug in their beds at night, that there are people who have nothing.
Yeah, well, I'm glad your folks are doing it, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and getting support from folks who are indoors. I mean, there is some of that happening here, but and I hear insofar as it's inspired anybody, whether in Salinas, where I think it did, and possibly up in Berkeley, although I think your actions far predate ours in many ways, although we both have been, you know, running back and forth, and it's good.
I'm just glad that we're in a position now to pressure whatever reluctance there may still be on our city council. And we're also in a position to do what Berkeley often does, which is create our own new scenario if we need to. There are a lot of creative suggestions for what happens now if the city council doesn't have the wisdom to roll back its anti-poor laws. We will see what happens.
My
favorite thing is to look past the immediacy of rolling back the 2-square-foot law, for instance, and making it legal to sleep in your own vehicle.
For sure.
Those are two of the more nutty things we have on the books. But out there in the horizon, what I want to do, and what I hope you'll consider doing as well, is eliminating this property-based business district where essentially the two largest properties that pay fees to a merchant association that works against our civil rights are getting them from the University of California and the city of Berkeley. It can't be much different in the city of Santa Cruz. Now, I don't want public money to go into the hands of a board that is basically huge property owners, most of whom don't live in Berkeley. They live in Chicago, New York. They're part of limited liability corporations from all over the nation, and all they care about is property and booting the poor out of the downtown.
Yeah, business improvement districts, of course, are notorious in many cities and in Santa Cruz as well, although I don't know how much money ours gets from the city. What it does is it's been authorized by the city to tax businesses, and that, of course, is nonsense.
And the city can unauthorize it. Even though there's really protective legislation at the state level for PBIDs, as they're called, property-based business improvement districts, the city has a contract. It renews yearly, and ours is about $1 million. My guess is Santa Cruz is a very similar amount of money. That money should be going straight to housing. If they're upset about people having to sleep outside or down in an alley somewhere, take that $1 million and put it to work.
So how likely is this wonderful new gang of progressives and our old hero, Chris Worthington, forgive my sarcasm, to actually move, much even put on the agenda, abolition of property-based business district funding?
So well put, Robert. Actually put on the agenda. That's why the silence I heard over the phone from Chris Worthington today was chilling. There will be the popular things that they're interested in doing. And then there will be the unpopular things, like defunding our Downtown Berkeley Association, which is our property business improvement district. And we will see. I've been working against that merchant group for over 30 years, and I'm interested in going to the hilt. I feel really strongly that as long as it's a civil rights issue, you should just never quit. So that's my plan.
Oh, I'm not saying you should. I'm just, again, I'm trying to assess for the naive observer whether you've still got the same top-heavy management powerful group.
I think we do.
Yeah.
And then, I think it is not as changed as people tonight, especially as they're all getting sworn in tonight. A lot of my liberal friends want to, you know, go down to the city council and wave their hands in the air and feel good. That's fine. I'm not going to deprive anybody of feeling good, but I will feel, I'll feel good when they defund the DBA.
For sure. Also, of course, this law you mentioned, the two-foot square law, has that been enforced or was it delayed pending other housing?
Depends on who you ask. What a great question. Has it been enforced? It was enforced before they passed the law. They decide, you know, who they want to hassle on the street depending on whether or not you look like you're homeless or poor. So, of course, they've been enforcing this law. But the law, when the law itself was passed, technically, it was not supposed to be enforced until they had created spaces for people to put their belongings so that if you did have more than 2 square feet of belongings, you would have a place to go to set them down. And the problematic aspect of this is nobody wants to have the homeless spaces for their belongings anywhere near their business, anywhere near downtown, anywhere near anyone and anywhere. And they were actually thinking of putting them down by the freeway. And all I could think was, well, this will be funny. Unless they provide a shuttle service from downtown down to the freeway and back, who's going to, like, what are you going to do when you go, like, oh, darn it all, I forgot my medication, which is in some bag, in some locker down by the freeway. I mean, it's so dumb. So that as they began to unthread all of this mess, what they began to see was that it was just completely unworkable in the first place. So it never really has technically been something the police were able to utilize and write down on your infraction. But no, they do this all the time. They raided the little tent encampment the other day. So, you know, they didn't need the law to take, what, 15 tents and just tear them to pieces. They'll finally give you back your tent. It'll be ripped, and they won't give you your tent pole. So it's just been a nightmare for the people who've been on the street and those of us who are just, like, constantly down at REI trying to buy more tents. Constantly at the Army surplus finding some more wool blankets. You know, it's crazy because I guess the best place to go scoop them up will be in whatever property room they have down at our police station.
Well, I know when we spoke maybe a week ago or a few days ago, you mentioned that you had put some pressure on, or maybe it was Becky O'Malley had put some pressure on, I don't know whether it was Mayor Jesse or one of the other local politicians, maybe the police chief, I don't know, to get the property back. And I'm wondering, A, was it ever returned? Or, and, you know, of course, you said the condition it's in. You clarified that situation.
Yes, some of it was.
But what about the encampment itself? What about the protest area? How's it doing? Have you seen it lately? Any
thoughts? Well, I've seen each of the areas that the group of tents have situated themselves in. And I'll just call it, first they came for the homeless. That's kind of the name under which they are grouped together. Each of those places has been fenced off with plastic fencing and stakes, and the line that the city will give you about them is that there was damage to the landscaping, damage to the lawn, damage, you know, and then it's steam cleaned and so forth because they're, of course, claiming that it's full of disease and smells and feces and so forth, some of which may be true. But so there's like 8 or 9 fenced off areas in town as they chase people around. And where they are right now is on a grassy median strip near the Berkeley Bowl in on Adeline Street in South Berkeley. And all I can say is, you know, I have no sympathy for a lawn with all due respect to lawns, they can regrow. So I'm annoyed that Chris chose this evening to not respond at all at my suggestion that there be a campground right next to City Hall. I think it belongs right next to City Hall.
Well, I know they spent some time moving from place to place near City Hall, and then previously they were near the Berkeley Bowl. I think that was the first place they moved after they...
Yeah, they're right near where they were before.
Moved from
yeah.
the hub when they were forced away from there.
It's not easy either, because they're trying to be really, really careful about using bathrooms that are open at only at certain times and keeping the area as clean as possible, you know, so... It's just making me angry as it gets colder and darker here we are. We now have a city council that has been at least claiming to all the people who voted for it, for the new majority, that they will do something about this and that they at least have a little committee of people thinking aloud, thinking technically about a campground. But I'm not seeing the action I want to see on it. I mean, they should just take the park area there and dedicate it to being a safe, sanctioned place for people to rest and sleep if they need to.
Any reports from Oakland? I know there are a lot of encampments under the freeway down there, and I imagine there probably are
Oakland
some in Berkeley,
too.
Oakland is
in so much trouble. Since this warehouse fire, all of a sudden, so many people have suddenly been evicted. And some of them are people of means, people who... have had live workspaces that looked pretty high-end but were technically not up to code and were not zoned for a living space. So the city council meeting this last Tuesday was crazy with people saying, hey, here's my eviction notice, here's my eviction notice. They said this wouldn't happen. They said that they weren't going to stand for landlords just turning on tenants this way, but that's exactly what's going on. And there is a street that has been allowed to just collect more and more people and tents. As a matter of fact, down near the freeways, there's just a ton of people living on the street. And they've stopped raiding that area. And they've provided porta-potties. And they tell me that there are these buses that bring portable showers down there. I'm not sure how much of that is connected to the city, but there seems to be, generally speaking, and this is not a fun place to live, but there's somehow in that what I see that is positive is a recognition that we've got to take steps to assist people who are living on the street.
Is something similar happening in practice in Berkeley near the freeways or not?
There is. They get chased around a lot, but one of the things that Berkeley's done that is, like, if you want to really see Berkeley at its most embarrassing, is that they put not plastic fences, but chain link, and fenced off the places under the freeway where you would get the most shelter from wind and rain. Fence them off so you'll find people putting their tents and arranging their sleeping bags and tarps on the perimeter of that fenced off area around Gilman. And it's just so sad. These are people who used to live out at the Albany Bulb, which was just, used to be a big dump and turned into an area that was just kind of a free place for people to make their own way if they could. No water source whatsoever, but if you were willing to truck in your own water, you could stay out there. I'm not saying that was an easy place to live either, but at least, you know, for a portion of time, for a few, probably 10 years, maybe a little longer than that, it was a place where it was understood that you were out of anybody's way. You weren't on the streets anywhere, so you could be sure that you wouldn't be thrown in jail in the middle of the night. That's no longer the case. They chased everybody out of there without providing them with any place to go, except for, I think they had some little rabbit-worn trailers that had a time limit on them. So you could stay there for a couple of months.
Yeah, I think they also bribed a few folks with money if they didn't come back. That's what I heard from several.
Oh, that's right. You could take a settlement. Yeah.
The other thing, though, that, there are many issues that I think you and I have discussed over the years, but in Santa Cruz, an issue that will be coming up this Saturday, we're doing a protest against the killing of Sean Arlt and Luke Smith by both Santa Cruz police and Santa Cruz sheriffs.
I'm glad to hear it.
And the issue, you know, is there are many issues, and there are many issues, but one of the issues is the determination of police departments. I almost assume it's nationwide, but I've certainly heard it. I've never heard of a police department that doesn't have this policy of lethal force, that they, when you shoot, shoot to kill. And it sounds like something out of, you know, a war, and of course
no,
it is.
No, it's actually a policy I agree with. I can explain why.
Uh-huh. I don't, but go ahead.
Yeah, you'll hear people object to that policy a lot, and when they do, they say something that sounds like this. They say, well, I don't see why they can't just shoot to, like, shoot them in the leg, or shoot them, you know, in some... Mm-hmm. The implication is that they should shoot people in some way that won't kill them,
mm-hmm.
and that would be better.
Mm-hmm.
And what most people don't realize is you're trying to create a policy that would, well, that would minimize the use of the gun unless there's absolute justification for killing the other person. What you don't want is for a gun, which is a lethal weapon, to be used in what cops would love to describe as a non-lethal way. First of all, most of them are as nervous as anybody else would be in the middle of a shooting. They're not thinking straight. Their adrenaline's pumping. It's not a good time to make any but the most obvious decision. Is my life in danger? Or is somebody else's life in danger? If you can answer yes to both those questions, then and only then are you allowed to even draw your weapon. Which is why, I mean, the security of this rule governing lethal weapons, governing guns, is why the weapons industry is so interested in what they call, what they love to call, non-lethal weapons. Because they know that that's never going to change. They do not want people pointing guns at others just to scare them, or pointing guns at others just to, like, shoot them in the foot, because they're bound to miss and kill them. They're bound to hit somebody else. The bullet's bound to ricochet into somebody else. It's just the worst policy.
Where did you hear this, Carol? Did you think this one up yourself?
Oh, I didn't think it up myself. This has been the policy governing guns and gunfire since day one. I mean,
forever. This isn't the Berkeley Police Department manual.
No. It's not the Berkeley Police Department. It's generally speaking, nationally, national best practices policy is exactly that. You do not want people using a gun for any reason except to kill somebody.
Well, you're saying people. Of course, we're talking about police officers.
I am talking about police officers.
Right.
Police practices dictate that you can't even draw your weapon unless your intention is to kill somebody.
I'm not aware that that's a requirement of the Santa Cruz Police Department. It certainly is a requirement that if
Check
they shoot,
out.
They shoot to kill. I should.
It's the best practices thing.
Uh-huh. I don't know.
But the upside of it, I mean, the reason that you want that policy is that imagine the way you've been mistreated and I've been mistreated by police. Imagine if they felt they were free to pull their guns out and just frighten people or injure people with their guns. You don't want that.
Well, they've got other ways of injuring people with other weapons.
Which we can talk about if you want to change the subject. But what you brought up was the policy governing lethal weapons, meaning guns. So I hear it on the radio all the time. Somebody will call in and say, well, I don't see why they can't just shoot them in the foot. And I always think, read the policy and give it some thought. You'll understand why. But usually it's,
you know, you'd have to show me that in countries where that was not the policy, that it was a much worse situation, that in countries where there isn't a policy of using lethal force whenever you draw your weapon, that it has proved to be bad. I don't know. I've never researched that. It's an interesting
question.
Are you kidding?
You don't have to go to some other country. We have it happening in this country because people will draw their gun and shoot somebody who is running away from them in the back.
I'm talking about the police department, right?
I am talking about the police department.
And I am, too.
I'm talking about Walter Scott.
I know.
Who
I'm
was
familiar
shot
with that.
In the back.
Yeah, no, I'm familiar with that.
A complete violation of police policy, and they couldn't even get a jury to see it.
Exactly.
Now, I'm saying this. I'm talking about what governs police officers using their lethal weapons, and that this policy needs to remain secure.
Well, it's, I think it would be just as easy to say, you know, you can if you shoot, you don't shoot to kill. But
oh no, oh no,
no.
People, are you kidding? People are. It's very hard to ask even a police officer who probably is regularly obligated to go and do target practice. It's very hard in the moment, in the dark, on a street, to shoot to kill.
I'm not sympathetic. Sorry, it may be very hard, but it is something I think the police departments can manage.
It has nothing to do with sympathy. I can't believe you don't understand this.
Well, believe
it. What you don't want is people firing their guns in the dark on spec.
Police officers firing their guns at all is a danger, as far as I'm concerned, completely.
Right. So you don't want that gun even coming out of the holster.
But, no, that's different. A gun coming out of the holster is one thing. Once it's out of the holster, if you're going to fire it, I would much rather have them fire it at somebody's leg than have them fire it at their chest or their head.
It's not an option.
I think it is.
This is where people who very often, I'm not accusing you of this, but very often people have watched too many movies and too many video games.
I probably have watched too many movies.
Could I just finish? They watch too many movies and too many video games, and they think it's an option to shoot someone in the leg. Most of the time, they're lucky if they hit you at all. No, what they're trying to do is kill you, and they're not allowed to take their gun out unless they're justified in that.
Well, let's agree to disagree on this one. But that
no,
is that is.
I'm not. This isn't up to you, and it isn't up to me. It's police.
No, it is up to me. My position, Carol, is always up to me.
You're not listening to me.
It is.
I'm not. You can have whatever opinion you
and
want.
I do. Let's
what
agree
I'm
to disagree.
Trying to explain to you is the best police practices that are the post practices that are that govern police. Officers nationally.
Putting a label on it does not help.
Oh, you keep wanting to interrupt me. Oh, all I'm saying is this is not my opinion. This is best practices.
I'm not saying it's just your opinion. I acknowledge it may be somebody's idea or...
It's not somebody's idea.
All right, I'm sorry.
These
the official...
Do you know post practices are police officer governing practices.
Yeah.
They're fought for by people like me. So that police officers don't wave their guns around needlessly just to frighten people.
Right. Well, I'm going to say that I'm going to agree to disagree with you with myself, whether you agree or not. And
you can't disagree with a fact.
No, there is.
This is just a fact.
Well,
that's all.
Well,
this
then
is
you
not
can call
opinion.
It a fact. That's fine. I don't deny that you do, and that's okay. Maybe we can move on to another subject since there is a difference of opinion for sure.
No,
on
you can't have a difference of
I can,
opinion.
I can, and I
about...
do. I do. I'm sorry, Carol. I have a difference of opinion.
Wait,
I don't
could I just say one thing?
If I can
could
say something
you stop
afterward,
interrupting
yeah.
me just long enough for me to say one thing.
If I can say something afterward, yes. Go ahead.
Okay. You can have an opinion. I can have an opinion. But in order to have a basis for discussion at all, there has to be some agreement about what the facts are. And all I was trying to tell you about was the governing best practices that are part of the post national guidelines for police officers.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay, now, may I say something now? May I say something now?
Go right ahead.
Thank you, Carol. The fact that there is any group, however distinguished, however much research it's done, however high and exalted and authoritative it may be, does not necessarily govern my opinion unless I agree with their conclusions, having looked at their research. Now, you are in a better position, perhaps, if you have looked at their research and aren't simply mouthing this best police practices litany, which I'm hearing again and again from you. If you've researched that report, if you've looked at different studies,
no.
then you're in a
you
better position. You're interrupting me. You're in a better position than I am.
No,
I'm not,
you're still misunderstanding. I'm not agreeing or disagreeing. I'm not asking you to agree or disagree. I'm just saying there are extant best practices. And once you've acquainted yourself with what they are, number one, and why they exist, number two, then and only then can you have an informed opinion. So I look forward to that day. Take a look.
Well, I've heard from you what I've heard, and I think I can always use more education. I think we all can. And I think, however, that, as I said, the label or the...
It's like arguing who wrote...
No, it's not. There's a difference.
No, it's like arguing the fact, who wrote a book.
Well, the, you know,
if you want to deny that Shanties from the Seven Seas was written by Hugill,
no,
I'm going to stand here with a book in my hand and go, well...
Well, that's fine. You can say, Robert, you're crazy. This is the reality of it.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying you are educated about best practices and why they exist, then and only then can we have informed
Obviously,
discussion.
Carol, someone makes a decision about what is the best...
No, it's not
wait,
someone.
Wait. I'm sorry. Somewhere in history, people looked at the situation...
Okay, I challenge you.
You're not letting me finish.
Right now,
Carol, you're not letting...
Rather than just
Carol,
talk through your hat...
No, you're not
read
letting...
Read about the best practices and find out
send
why
me,
they
send me, send me an email about what you think is an appropriate source.
No, I've talked to you. You're not listening. This will come to you tomorrow morning. You'll think, I wonder what she was talking about. But I love you. You're a great guy.
Is there anything else?
When you are better informed,
Carol,
about
is
the
there
post
anything
practice,
else we should be discussing other than this? That's my question.
I'm off to dinner and
listen,
have a great night.
Don't have indigestion. You take care. Bye
bye.
Bye bye. And that was Carol Denny. You can see I sometimes have some really strong disagreements with. And the point that she would not let me finish was that someone decides what are best practices, and that gets done at a certain point, maybe by a group of police officials, maybe by a lot of people consulting together, maybe after a lot of research. But it doesn't come from God on high, and it sounds like, the way Carol's describing it, that it comes from that kind of situation, and I don't think that's how it evolved. I don't know how it evolved. She didn't say how it evolved. She just keeps repeating again and again best police practices. Well, I think it's a real significant practice about an issue, a question of what is the best police practice. And I'm certain there are many people who have different opinions. I tend to be suspicious of, if it's a police lobby group that did this, I'm suspicious. But Carol's suggesting that perhaps it was folks who were concerned about police using their guns in bad ways, so threatening people and using it to bully people and, because they think they can do so in a non-lethal way, and that's why it's the best police practice to always pull your gun out, if you're going to shoot someone to kill. I understand the argument. I don't necessarily think it's true or justified. So, obviously, I need to do some more research on that, and perhaps I will. If you have any thoughts on this subject, feel free to call in, 427-3772, 427-3772. It is an issue in the Sean Arlt and Luke Smith killings as to whether that is a practice that should have been followed in their case. Obviously it shouldn't have been. Neither of them were a threat in any real way to the police. At least that's the impression one gets from the very limited information we're getting. The fact is that the video and the audio and the Sean Arlt killing are still being withheld, as is the name of the officer, and only limited video has been released in the case of the Luke Smith shooting, although we do know the name of the officer who did. Vigil, I think, is the name of the officer, the deputy who did. So you're tuned to Free Radio. It's freakradio.org, which we're streaming on, hopefully to get back on the air again one of these years, days or weeks. It would be nice. And I was about to play a sort of an interaction that happened outside Union Grove Music. I mentioned this is a store, Nick, which has its own parking lot across from the Metro on Pacific Avenue, where folks would often sit on the sort of the low-lying wall there and chat and sometimes panhandle and sometimes play music. It depends, different things. And then this change-making machine was put in, which as long ago as 1994 activated a law that said you can't panhandle within 50 feet and you can't sit down, unless you bring your own chair, within 50 feet. And that set up a 100-foot zone around the change machine, and that was parked right near Union Grove Music. And there was a similar machine that would then appeared across the street. And there were two of them. Again, coincidentally, in areas where people would gather. And the police then use this as a basis for driving people away. Similarly, that happened in front of what is now Forever 21 on Pacific Avenue near Soquel Avenue. So anyway, I came upon a dispute. I think several rangers were chatting with a group of guys who had backpacks and beards and were sitting on the street or on this little wall that is owned by Union Grove Music, but it's frequently used by the public. And Union Grove, I think one of the employees was, you know, peeking out the door of Union Grove, and I came up to a witness and document what was going on. So we're here outside Union Grove Music Planter talking with...
Hi, my name is Dex.
And Dex, you're a man with music, as you can hear, and a local pooch. What's the name of that dog?
Her name's Karma.
And
she's
Karma,
the bitch.
And she's the bitch. Well, seems very mellow, occasional bark. So you, the Union Grove music woman came out. She was concerned that something about jokes and no customers being offended and you're being on their property and touching a ukulele.
That guy didn't even get to even tell a joke. He just asked the owner of the store if she'd like to hear a joke. And, I mean, this is part of our corner. This is where everybody hangs out. And the gentrification of this town is getting ridiculous. You can't even hang out on the levee anymore. You can't hang out on the street. You can't do anything unless you have about $1,000 in your pocket. And that's kind of silly because we all need to exist. Just because I don't have what you want me to have does not mean that you can tell me to go fuck myself, you know? And, like, this has happened to me 3 times today already.
Tell me about the other times.
The other times? All right, so I was eating Christmas dinner, the free Christmas dinner over there.
Where?
At the Civic Center. And a man comes up to me, and he's like, hey, there's old people and children around here. You might want to relocate. Well, I'm sitting there eating my dinner. And I'm like, what do you mean? Why? And he's like, because you look the way you do, you need to leave. And I'm like, no, I don't. I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm eating dinner with you. And so I was told that I need to leave. But then the security guard came because I wouldn't leave. All right? Security guard came, and security guard took my side. The security guard took my side because he realized that guy was just being a jerk. And he just didn't want me there because of the way I look. Okay?
So you continued eating?
Yeah, I continued eating. So the security guard came over, and I said, I'd like you to leave. And I'm like, noob, why? And I sat there and talked to him.
Same security guard?
I had the guy kicked out of there, and then I opted to leave. Because that's my opinion, option to do that.
Did the security guard also asked you to leave?
No. Well, he did. He asked me to leave. I told him I wasn't going to leave until that guy was also forced to leave because he started a problem. And I didn't start any problem at all. I don't walk up to people while they're eating and tell them, like, you don't look the way I want you to.
Did either of you raise your voices as a consequence?
Oh, I raised my voice, yes. I am a very emotional person. I'm an artist, a musician, a comedian, a fucking magician. So, sorry for cursing. But, I am not doing anything to harm anybody. I only bring culture to
them. What was the second incident?
Second incident? At the library. Somebody was like, hey, I don't like you guys sitting here. I'm like, who's us guys? And I'm like, I'm in town for the weekend selling art and doing magic.
I saw your magic sign earlier.
Yeah. Would you like to see magic? Well, once we're done with that, I'll show you magic. Sure. But
by the way, if you want, you're still not hungry. I take it right
no,
now.
No.
Because food,
yeah.
Food Not Bombs is serving.
Oh, by a post office? Oh, I might want to walk up there.
I'm about to take.
I love Food Not Bombs. I mean, I like to bring a can of meat with me when I go there. But, yeah, Food Not Bombs, they make delicious food. I love Food Not Bombs.
So the library situation, they wanted you to leave.
Oh, yeah, no, but the security guard was the same security guard, and he said, no. And he said, you're allowed to hang out here, and I got passed. But then I'm sitting here, and this kid walks up, and he asks if I can sit next to me and tell jokes. And I'm like, dude, I don't mind. And then he asked the lady if she would like to hear a joke. And she got mad about it. And she called the cops.
Did she say that you were on her property, she wanted you to move?
Well, she didn't tell me that at all. I didn't even hear what the interaction between them. I told him to just leave her alone because he was already getting in a slight argument with her. And then I...
You got into the argument or he did?
Oh, no. He got in the argument. And then I just told him, calm down, everything's fine. You're not doing anything wrong, just sit down.
He took off.
And then when I saw the Costco, I told him to stand up. Yeah, he took off. But like, I know I wasn't doing anything wrong. And so I...
You don't mind if I put this on free radio?
I don't mind at all. No.
Did you see any of this whole scene?
Yeah, I just saw it.
What did you see? What is her name?
You might not heard her say it, but she did say she asked the guys to get out of their flower bed, out of the bed there. So, and
but I mean, I've been hanging out on this spot for years.
But she says,
and it's silly, especially since they're closing down.
It's okay with her. She's pretty liberal about it, and lets people do it, but. She said you kind of do it too much and not kind of leave like other people do. I just talked to her a little about it after. She's cool with it. She says most people are really nice about it. They leave. They kind of stay for a while and move.
Tree kids always hang out in this corner.
Yeah, but it's always been that way here. But like she said, she has people that they move on for a little while, and they are in the beds. And they're not public beds. And even the public, they would say something because they'd say, hey, you're trampling the plants. Right?
It's just dirt.
No, it's not. Because it's dirt because people have trampled what's in there. And they trample all of it.
Hire a gardener. And then I wouldn't.
No, because if they hired a gardener, then people would still abuse it, right?
Well, I don't know.
Not so we've covered this. I'm going to thank you both.
I mean, I understand what you're saying, too. And if that's you have an option and you're right too.
And you can't eradicate you and me.
No, I'm not. I have nothing to do with that. What I'm saying though is that if you don't sit actually in bed, you
don't. So we're.
And what I eventually advised Dex to do was said, I told him, look, it's illegal. You're on their private property because they have this nice big parking lot. And they don't want you to sit on this little area right adjacent to it that is still part of their property. Why don't you move, you know, to the curb and sit there if you want. It's legal to do that, provided you are 14 feet from a building and provided you won't have a display device. And provided if you have a display device, you have to be on one of the performance pins. But otherwise, you don't. That's still the rule. The sitting ban is extensive throughout the Pacific Area Avenue. Leaving only about less than 1%, I'd say less than 0.5% of the sidewalk to sit down on. But there are certain spots, and that happened to be one of them. And I think he did that. He took that up, that option. I then went in and talked to the woman who he had this confrontation with. She didn't want to be recorded, so I didn't. I talked to her before. She actually came out to talk to me, wanted to explain to me at length why she had told the guy to leave, and she kept insisting, he just has to leave. Everyone else leaves. Everyone else is nice. Why doesn't he leave? And I didn't argue with her about it. This sense of entitlement that merchants have to the sidewalk in front of their stores is horseshit, of course. It's understandable, but it's irrelevant because it's a public sidewalk. And in spite of the many, many restrictions put on the public sidewalk, it is still, in essence, at the core, a public thoroughfare, sidewalk. And people have a right to socialize there, whether they, you know, whether the businesses next door like it or not. And anyway, we had a kind of a friendly chat because she's come out before when we've had these discussions that when she was driving other people away, and she really wants to explain herself because years ago she and her husband Richard came to town and they were starving musicians and they started started Union Grove Music and so forth. Now they're moving, by the way. The Union Grove Music is closing down. Its last day will be December 24th. If you want to go down there and you know the folks there, or you want to maybe be having some sales, for all I know, you might want to get into that. But I don't know. Not clear who's moving in there, whether it's going to get worse for people on the streets or not. But it's just an example of a merchant entitlement. And I don't mean to say this out of disrespect for the woman or a lack of understanding for frankly, the flowers, if that are, I didn't see the people sitting on this little stone raised area right along the edge of the parking lot, which also included some flowers, that they were damaging the flowers at all. That was not the issue. The issue was entitlement to the property and the right to clear people away that she apparently wants to keep asserting, even though she's leaving in a couple of weeks. And that's, I think it is an unnecessary and unreasonable assertion of power, unless there's some other reason for it. If they're engaging in, slave trading on the sidewalk, or they're, I don't even want to say drug dealing, because I hate that as an excuse, but I suppose that could be used. That, I don't know if that was the, I don't think that was the claim in this case. He was, doing magic tricks, or they were telling jokes. She just didn't like the congregation of people there, and there were three or four of them. And they were men. I think there was one woman. Anyway, that's an incident that happened downtown 4 days ago. It was on the, I believe it was on the 4th that that went down. And the police left shortly after I parked my car next to it in order to whip out my recorder. That was on the 4th. The next day was Monday, 3 days ago. Made my way to the Red Church, the Calvary Episcopal Church that serves a meal on Monday night. Got there late, but I did do a few interviews, one with an Association of Faith Communities monitor slash, I guess he's a board of directors guy. I might have his title wrong. Scott Galloway. Let's hear what he had to say. He and I talked about the shelter program. There is a shelter program that opened up earlier. I think it was on December. Might have been December 4th it opened up. And they're taking people from the Tannery area, a little bit beyond the Tannery, out to 7th Avenue for a shelter which houses 50 people. If you go show up at 4 o'clock and then they get up 6 in the morning, come back, they'll bus you back, and that's going to be going on until January 1st when it will be expanded to include a shelter in downtown Santa Cruz. I guess at the, well, near downtown Santa Cruz, the Salvation Army area. I'm assuming it's the same place that's right across from the high school on Laurel Street. But let's hear from Scott.
Talking with
Scott Galloway of the Association of Faith Communities of Santa Cruz County.
You are working a somewhat expanded from your 20-person mini shelter program of the last few years. You've been burdened with the winter shelter program, in which 50 lucky winners will be able to get in out of the cold for the next month.
Well, the Faith Community Shelter, a very successful shelter that houses 20 people, is still going on every night.
So we have a total of 70.
But in addition, the County of Santa Cruz Homeless Service Center and the Association of Faith Communities are working together to sponsor the winter shelter. That'll house 50 people from now until January 1st, and after that, 100 people a night.
So you've been picking people up at this location at the right past the Tannery every night, as I understand it, where buses don't run to. I think they stop at the Homeless Lack of Services Center at Coral Street.
Actually, buses have been arranged from community bridges to pick people up just north of the Tannery Arts Center and north of the transit buildings at a lot. And people register there and are then transported to the VFW hall on 7th Avenue.
Right, but if somebody wants to get to the transportation site, there's no bus that takes them there.
The
right?
Harvey West route should still take people out in the vicinity of the Homeless Services Center, but they'll have to, I think, Encinal, but they'll have to walk from Encinal a couple of blocks north, yeah.
So for disabled folks, it ain't too easy, in other words.
I would not say it was centrally located, no.
So, what's your role in this, Scott?
Well, I don't have a direct role. I'm the secretary of the board of the Association of Faith Communities, so my role has primarily been in procuring insurance for the program and doing some of the background work relating to legal issues and so forth. So.
What legal issues have come up, if any, that you care to share with the community?
Well, we're trying really hard. The AFC is a California nonprofit corporation. We're in the process of obtaining 501c3 status from the IRS. I've been working on that. And then there have been a lot of contracts we had to sign and put together for this program to make it work. We had to have transportation. We had to have sites rented. And, of course, we had to have an agreement with the Homeless Services Center. So all those took negotiations and contracts. And so there's been quite a number of things that had to be done.
So I understand this is, what, there's $360,000 being shoved into this scheme until April?
I love your wording.
The
cost of the program through April 15th is $360,000. That was the amount of money available to operate the program, and that's about what it takes. It's possible to do it with that amount of money, even though last year it cost a lot more, because the food is largely being prepared and served by volunteers. So that's a big help this year. That's the first time we've done it, and we've also escaped the armory, and we're now using other facilities at a lower cost.
An average month cost for the Association of Faith Communities, 20-person program?
Well, we have the entire Association of Faith Communities budget, including everything, insurance and everything else for the whole program, is $65,000
a year. And how much time? A year.
Yeah.
So you take care of 20 people a year, 12 months a year, 7 days a week for $60,000.
$65,000, but that includes insurance for the whole program, the Socks for People in Need program, our online service directory, and everything else we do.
So if you were given $360,000 for the year, you want me to think that you might be able to expand your program at least fourfold?
Well, yes, one would hope we could do that. However, what the AFC's position has been, the board's position has been, and we published a white paper to this effect, we would like to see by next year an all-year shelter instead of just a winter shelter. And we think there are more cost-effective ways of setting that up if we can find a location for that to occur.
Now, do people come to the various, I understand there's sort of a rotating church a la the kind of program that was being used before the Interfaith Satellite Shelter program when it was going on 2 decades and a decade ago. Do people come directly to the church, or is there still this we have to pick you up and spend money on carting you around in vehicles deal?
Well, the AFC's Faith Community Shelter program encourages people to come to the sites on their own. They do that either in their own automobile or by bus.
Unlike the winter shelter program, in which you cannot go to the shelter yourself.
Well, no, you can't, because in the first place, most people are trying to get there from generally Santa Cruz area, and this is out in Live Oak.
But so January, it'll be the Salvation Army down.
In January, it'll be the Salvation Army.
You will not be able to go there.
Well, the registration is done at this site on River Street, and then people are transported. And, of course, that transportation contract isn't cheap. And that's one of the reasons we think a well-located all-year shelter would be a great improvement over the winter shelter requiring transportation.
You don't even have a well-located 20-person shelter, and yet you still manage to allow these homeless vagabonds and menaces to the community, as some people see them, to show up at the churches themselves without being nannied in on vehicles. Did you have any input into this whole process, particularly for the January expansion of the shelter here in Santa Cruz? Are they adult enough to walk to the damn shelter and save some money?
Well, the agencies providing the money put out a request for proposals, which pretty much dictated how they wanted the program to be run. AFC
what agency is that?
This is the county of Santa Cruz. The Association of Faith Communities did not directly respond to that proposal with a counterproposal, but we told them we were interested in trying to work something out. But what we had to work out was consistent with the funding that was coming to us. So the city had to allow us to pick up in a particular location, and the county had to sort of design the program, and we're trying our best to meet their requirements for how to operate the program.
Their requirements include treating the homeless like a sort of a contagious disease that has to be quarantined, moved in vehicles, and cannot get there themselves for fear of contaminating the neighbors?
Well, that's a leading question. I'd have to say I don't know what the county's perspective on this is. I only know what was in the request for proposals, and that involved transportation. The original request for proposals spoke about the armory as a location, and we were able to negotiate alternative sites, which we think, and two smaller sites as opposed to one large site, which we think is going to help us build community among the population and have a program that's going to have a greater success.
Will people be banned if they sit on as kind of choose here at the feeding program, or if they walk out a plate of food, to be harassed, or if they are eating relatively in a peaceful manner, will they be told with chairs banging that they better get their asses moving out of here?
Well, that question was
a
leading question. It was a presumptive question.
And what I'm talking about here, of course, is the policies of the particular church that we're both standing in, that is also part of the Association of Faith Communities 20 Church program that's been going on throughout the year, and is its policy, or at least it's the policy, or was the policy, the people running the meal, that you would you couldn't sit outside, you couldn't take your food outside, you couldn't leave with your food generally, that if you were eating towards 6:45, you'd find this rather robotic, loud staff member clanging chairs into a chair holder and suggesting it was time for you to leave. Stuff that kind of annoyed me, even upset me at times.
We don't allow people to stay on the lawn here at Calvary Church, which is a whole different issue than we've been discussing. We did have a problem. We were having people on the lawn waiting for the meal or having the meals on the lawn, but we started having a lot of problem with drug use. So that was curtailed. People now are asked to come inside and eat inside. If people come to me and ask me in the course of the meal if they have a sick family member or camp member, and they take food out, we'll wrap the food in foil for them and let them take it out. But we don't let people walk out of the building with open plates. No.
Well, that could be dangerous, I agree. So, you leave me breathless. I don't know what else to say. Do you have any comments you wish to make about this whole program?
Well, not really. I'd say the Calvary Coffee House is a wonderful success and shows you what you can do in the way of providing nutrition to people.
Once a week.
However, the winter shift.
Calling the soup line at the Calvary Episcopal Church on Mondays a coffee house is quite a stretch. And I want to make it real clear that when I said it was a safety precaution not to let people take their food out the door, I was being heavily sarcastic. By the way, if you had any experiences on or around any of the food programs in town, or you have some thoughts about the way I'm describing this, or some new information, or some questions, please call in 427-3772.
Shelter is going to be feeding, you know, by January 1st, 100 people a night, which is wonderful, I think.
But not the 250 served regularly by the Homeless Lack of Services Center for the last 15 years until the bigots moved in.
No comment on that, sir.
Why have you no comment on that?
Because I don't know the facts, so it would be unfair of me.
Are you unaware of the fact that last summer, I should say summer before last, Phil Kramer, or whoever was, I think it was his predecessor, discontinued the meal program for the general homeless population? Is that a fact that's escaped you?
Well, no, I understand that funding was cut to the Homeless Services Center and they had to make program changes. I'm not party to knowing how many people were fed or not fed, how many people were showered or not showered.
Are you aware that their budget is over $1 million a year?
That sounds about appropriate.
Aware that the cost of feeding people, considering the donated food, is less than 5% of that, if that?
Well, I'm not aware of that, but if that's what you tell me, I guess that must be correct.
That's generally my understanding.
Hi.
How are you? How
are
you doing?
Fine. How are you doing?
Good. I'm traveling across country going.
And our conversation was interrupted by some more specific needs of a particular individual who was using the meal. You're tuned to Free Radio at freakradio.org. The name of this show is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Today is the 8th of December, 2016, and I'll be doing a longer show, if health allows, on Sunday. I've been having some health problems, and it's... I'm still hanging in there, but we'll see. This protest that's coming up on Saturday, which is, I think, the fourth or fifth protest that I've been involved in trying to get Chief Kevin Vogel of the Santa Cruz Police Department or Sheriff Jim Hart of the county sheriffs to come clean on videos, audios, and other details around the homicides of Sean Arlt and Luke Smith. Newspapers, the Sentinel has been, latest spin on this issue has been, or at least the latest focus on it, is a story about attorney appointed in Santa Cruz drug case. Nathaniel Tracasso is accused of selling drugs to Luke Smith. And this is a story by Mike Todd, who actually came to our protest last Saturday and did a story on the protest, which you can find in the Sentinel. I think he did it on Sunday or Monday. His story here, however, again shifts the focus from the people who did the shooting to someone who allegedly sold Luke the LSD, as though somehow that was responsible for the killing, and this guy should somehow be get the book thrown at him, which in fact is what they're trying to do. Here's a story. Nathaniel Tracasso was hiding on a shelf in a closet late November 19th when law enforcement entered and allegedly found a drug lab in his apartment on Pacific Avenue. A drug lab. Now Tracasso cannot return to the apartment even if released. The 28-year-old remains in custody at Santa Cruz County Jail in connection with supplying drugs alleged to have fueled a tantrum by 15-year-old Luke Smith. Tantrum. That's the first time I've heard that word used to describe a bad LSD trip. And also a stabbing situation. I guess a tantrum is a milder way of, instead of saying stabbing of two relatives. The spree resulted in the use of lethal force against Luke by a Santa Cruz County Sheriff's deputy early November 19th in Corralitos. And some of this we've talked about, and some of it we'll talk about again on Saturday. And hopefully some of the relatives will be there to talk about it, too. Again, my focus on this still is, I'm still of the opinion that there are other ways to proceed than lethal force. Whoever claims it's the best practice. And no, it's not written in the skies that it's the best practice. It may be the best practice, but that's not as obvious as the moon is, you know, is in the sky or the dirt is on the ground. Those are, you know, those are statements of fact. It is not necessarily a fact. It is an opinion, and it is perhaps a considered judgment. Anyway, one of my offhand judgments is that there seems to be, I would assume, better ways, and also, if there aren't better ways, then there shouldn't be any shame or hesitancy in showing the video and the audio and letting people know what goes on. In the case of the Santa Cruz Police Department, that has not been the case. In the case of the Sheriff's Department, they've partially shown some. And we're talking about the case involving the sheriffs. Tracasso, again, this is the guy accused of selling Smith LSD, watched the courtroom gallery Wednesday during hours of arraignment and hearings before Superior Judge Stephen Siegel, who upheld his $150,000 bond and ordered intensive probation with electronic monitoring. Tracasso pleaded not guilty to three felony drug charges of solicitation of a minor to supply controlled substances, possession of a controlled substance for sale, and conspiracy to manufacture drugs. Of course, all of this is really a function of the drug war. So if somebody dies of tobacco poisoning, are they going to take the cigarette manufacturers to court? Of course, people are dying every day in large numbers of tobacco poison. They're much older, of course, but it's a function of the lung cancer that develops as a consequence of these sales tactics and so forth. But, of course, we don't see these guys dragged in, no. Nor do we see the individuals who trained the police or the police officers who shot this guy when he was surrounded by 11 law enforcement officials, all heavily armed, and they sent in a dog. And when he defended himself with his 4-inch knife, they shot him dead from a distance with a rifle. And no, I don't think, our last caller to the contrary, that somebody with a rifle would have a problem shooting a different part of the body if they've had any rifle training. When it was dark, you know, I don't know. And you can say, how the hell do you know? And it's a legitimate question. Anyway, my real question is why the focus on Tricasso instead of on the Sheriff's Department and the Police Department? That's the issue for me. Assistant District Attorney Abel Hung asked the court to consider Tricasso a serious flight risk because so little is known about his background. So if you're a criminal, you know, then they know about your background and you're a bad guy. But if they don't know anything about your background, then you're still a flight risk, even if you've been a member of the community for a period of time. But let's hear more about Tricasso. I don't know anything about him. It doesn't seem that we know a lot about him, Hung said. Attorney Charles Stevens, who was appointed to represent Tricasso, said his client works in construction, has three people he could live with if released, and he has no criminal history. So apparently, he also said Tricasso has been living in a Pacific Avenue apartment since July 1st and cannot go back to that apartment. Probably was evicted, another part of the landlord power. So if you get burned to death in a fire, you can't go back to your, you know, they're going to start evicting people all over the city of Oakland. We've heard that from Carol, and that's a real concern, obviously. And similarly, in Santa Cruz, we have landlord power. The shooting remains an active investigation by the DA's office. Chief Deputy District Attorney Rob Wade, we're gathering official statements, various statements from witnesses or an independent agency. He said, unlikely the case would involve felony murder charges. Generally, for felony murder, someone was in the process of rape, robbery, arson, or mayhem, those kinds of specific crimes, if someone dies during the commission of those crimes. Luke Smith died while under the influence of LSD. And the county sheriff's office said was linked to Tricasso's apartment and alleged drug lab. A sheriff's office deputy shot and killed Luke about 3:15 a.m. November 19th near Corralitos after he allegedly stabbed his uncle and father and was chased by authorities. And they busted the drug lab at 11 p.m. November 19th. Tricasso was in an undisclosed hospital since that time. He was arrested Sunday. Why was he in a hospital? You know, I don't want to seem presumptuous. Did somebody beat him up? There's no information in this story. Hung said information from the hospital raised suspicions about Tricasso's condition. He was essentially faking the ailment, Hung said. Tricasso's preliminary hearing is scheduled for January 11th. For those of you who want to follow this case story by Michael Todd, attorney appointed in Santa Cruz drug case. I know the attorney, his name is Stevens. Actually had him on the show years ago, but recently he has declined to get involved. Or maybe I should follow up and get in touch with Stevens. So, other stories of interest which I may dredge up, and I thought I did come up with a few that were of interest, but I don't know if I have them immediately accessible here. So many choices, and let's turn to some perhaps somebody else's voice as well as mine. And again, my apologies for the lack of music. Hopefully Uncle Dennis will have better luck with his program, which follows mine in 35 minutes. Here's some more from the Red Church from last Monday. A smaller number of people there than in the past. Usually at the beginning of the month there are less people. And there's more often during the Christmas season, there's more meals and facilities at least temporarily available until everybody sort of decides, Christmas comes, now we're gone, now we can go back to business as usual. Driving poor people out of Santa Cruz or treating them like pariahs or ignoring your fellow human being on the street, which I'm pretty good at myself, by the way.
Susan Worth. Susan Worth.
Susan, you have your two pooches with you, as ever. But you say that, how long ago was this incident that occurred where you apparently played Ring Around the Rosie with the Coonerties?
Well, what day was Ralph Nader here?
I don't know.
Less than a month ago.
Now, some of the background to this, which regular listeners know, is Susan Wirth is an older woman who has two small dogs. Apparently, at one point in the bookshop Santa Cruz, which I call the bookshop Coonerty, it's a Coonerty family, who I have political disagreements with and also disagreements on their policy regarding their business, and although they have had some positive things to say about them, too. In any case, she was accused of having one of her dogs poop in the bookstore, and so she was apparently told she couldn't come back. She insists that she would have been happy to clean it up if she'd been advised, but she wasn't. And she also went in there to use the bathroom. They called the police on her, had her either arrested or escorted out and ticketed. She was taken to court, and she was on this charge of trespass. I think she was fined $600. And this is a sort of a further elaboration of her. I think she went back to use the bathroom. And, in fact, I think anyone, even including Susan Wirth, even if her doggy did go poo-poo, and even if the Coonerty management said, you can't come back, the Coonerty bathroom is part of the Coonerty bookstore. And the Coonerty bookstore, while it's private property, has a sign out front that says, Visitor's Restroom. And what that means is the city, unless they've taken it down, I don't think they have, the city is funding that restroom for everyone to use while the place is open. Not just the customers, not just the well-to-do, you know, not just white folks, but everybody. And if the Coonertys don't like it, they need to take down the sign and say, this is a private bathroom. We reserve the right to exclude anyone we want. They haven't done that. And I myself had an incident with Neil Coonerty, the elderly former supervisor, former mayor, who confronted me when I went in to go to the bathroom 2 years ago. I was excluded from the bookshop Santa Cruz under pain of arrest because 22 years ago I threw a protest in front of the bookshop when Coonerty, then council member and previously mayor, the elder Coonerty, Neil Coonerty, helped pass the anti-homeless downtown ordinance and championed them. And we militantly demanded that, you know, people be aware of this, boycott his bookstore. And I don't even think we were calling for a boycott at that point. Later we were. But somebody, we identified him as being one of the individuals who was responsible for the laws of criminalizing poor people in Santa Cruz, which he was. I mean, he is. He can give you whatever explanation he wants, but those are the facts. 2 days after that, somebody threw a rock through his window. He blamed me and banned me ever since from ever coming in his bookshop, as well as a number of other people who were political activists who had nothing to do with throwing rocks through his window or one rock. But it was Coonerty decided he was going to make an example or he was having a fit of pique, whatever the reason was. In any case, subsequently, a couple years ago, there was a protest against the Salinas chief of police who came to town to be present in a book reading. There was a large crowd out front of protesters. I was there, and I went in to use the bathroom with actually an Indy Bay journalist. That's a local online news service where local individuals, myself included, write for that service. It's called Santa Cruz Indy Media. I mention it frequently on this show. Went in to use the bathroom, and I was confronted by this growling Neil Coonerty. He was very angry. He said, get out! And I said, I'm coming to use the bathroom. And he said, get out! And I said, you know, this is a public bathroom. Which way to the bathroom? He kept shouting at me, and the guy behind me, the Indy Bay photographer, kept taking pictures. So Coonerty said, put his hand over the camera, and I said, look, Neil, if you're not going to tell me where the bathroom is, I'll just go find it myself. And eventually, I couldn't get through the thick crowd. The place was very thick, and so after winding around for a while, I left. And the story was written up a bit on Santa Cruz Indy Media. I think it happened in the fall of 2014. Anyway, Susan Wirth and others have had similar problems with a bathroom that's supposed to be open to the public. Now, I want to say this, and I always do. Hopefully, I always do. I think I usually do. When I mention the Coonertys have a checkered history in Santa Cruz. Neil and then his children, Ryan Coonerty, who's now a supervisor, and Brian's sister, who manages the place, the Coonerty Bookshop, and I think is married to the Dale Williams jewelry family. They've always had a bathroom open to the community generally, with the exception of those they exclude. And this was before they got money from the city to have an official visitor's restroom. And they've done this when they were in their older building. The Bookshop Santa Cruz was previously located next to where Lulu Carpenter's is now, before the earthquake, the 1989 earthquake. And since then, when they moved to their new location, they've still allowed this. And good for them. I mean, good for them. I'm glad they do that. However, they can't pick and choose if they take money from the city who they're going to let in their bathroom, unless someone is engaging in criminal behavior of some kind, and then obviously that's different. Anyway, this is more of Susan Wirth's experience. She, as I said, got ticketed, got arrested, had to pay a huge amount of money, and then she describes more recent events as well. And here we go.
Okay, so Ralph Nader came to town, and what happened?
Yeah, he was in the bookstore, Bookshop Santa Cruz, and I've only supported his candidacy twice and went, been a bona fide Raider Nader, Nader Raider, and I just wanted to get a glimpse of him. Actually, I would have liked to have talked with him a little bit if he hadn't been busy, but he was busy with somebody that he'd, you know, because he'd written a book and talking to that person about his book. And, no, Casey, I didn't know she would be in the
Casey
store.
Casey Coonerty, the manager,
yeah,
owner
Casey
of the store.
Casey Coonerty Prati. She spotted me, and I walked out and then walked into
Palace Arts.
Where I've shopped a lot and bought a lot of stuff, too. Same thing at Bookshop Santa Cruz. I've spent easily over $2,000 there over the years.
And I bet you wish you had.
No, I do. I wish I could get that money back.
Hi, how you doing?
The nerve. And my sisters, I brought my sisters in there. They spent money there. It's wrong, really.
What happened when you went into Palace Arts?
So when I went into Palace Arts, I'm standing there talking with some people, with some of the people that work there, about art supplies. I'm thinking about getting back into my watercolors. I actually was offered $1,000 for one of my watercolor paintings way back when. Never did frame it, never did sell it. But nonetheless,
Coonerty pursued you in there?
Yeah. She had two police officers chase me into the back of Palace Arts.
Were they art lovers, or did they just want to get them to know you better?
I don't know. I doubt if they were at all. They were just asshole cops.
What was the outcome?
I did not come to town to see cops. I come to shop like everybody
else. Did you get ticketed or arrested?
No, they tried. But I threatened to pee on the carpet because they wouldn't let me into the restroom. Of course, it was all making me nervous, and I had to pee. I have an enlarged uterus. Yeah.
Arts wouldn't let you use the bathroom?
I actually had the restroom key in my hand, and the woman who was the manager that day came over and ripped it out of my hands. So I said, well, I guess I'm going to have to
pee on the floor.
Right.
Oh, well.
I said, I really don't want to do that. I'd rather pee somewhere on a toilet, you know.
What did she do then?
Well, then the cops were going, they're trying to think, where's the nearest bathroom that's not Bookshop Santa Cruz? They mentioned something down the street. But I knew that the library was right up here, so I just zoomed out, and they couldn't catch me.
I bet you're still on the lam, eh? The bathroom bandit. That's you, lady. We've been talking
with... It's so wrong. Susan Wirth.
We'll talk to you more later.
She has no proof that my dog ever pooped in her store, and for her to have me arrested was totally illegal. And they actually threatened to take my driver's license away if I didn't pay them. All they want is money.
How much money do they want?
Oh, $680.
A pittance. I'm sure you can manage that.
Oh, yeah.
You better finish eating, otherwise they'll take away your table here.
Yeah. It's just immoral.
We've been talking with...
I'm Susan Wirth, but...
Thank you, Susan. I'm sorry I didn't get here earlier. We could talk more, but I'm...
horrible.
I hear you. Looks like we missed the main event here. We've been listening to the music of
Me and My Drum. Oh, my name is Lee.
Jesus on the Streets Musical Ministry with Mama B. Promise and Papa Lee Wilson.
Yeah.
John Martin here.
And there you have it. Plus,
Master of Ceremonies.
Harriet on piano.
Thank you all, four of you.
She's Harriet.
Ah, well, I don't believe it for a minute. So, Steve.
That's the Bernie candidate.
Steve played potential Bernie candidate and well-spoken and well and shapely man about Santa Cruz. You're also intake coordinator for the famous 50 people a night, maybe a few more program that goes up to 7th Avenue.
Yeah, in fact, we just had the car motion.
And Steve Plaich, of course, is the person who I don't know if his homeless legal assistance project is still projecting, but he was a city council candidate before he withdrew, although he withdrew so late that not sure if the votes that went to him, about 1,000 votes, even though he withdrew, would have gone to one of the so-called more progressive candidates like Steve Schnarr and Drew Glover. Not sure what the story is with that. But Steve is also involved as he'll be talking to you about it now, on intake for the Winter Shelter Program, which is the program where there will be, as we've heard before, talking with Scott Galloway. 50 folks get in. You show up at 4 outside the tannery, a little bit beyond the tannery, and you get a ride up after you fill out your forms. You get a ride up to the shelter. You get a meal. I don't know if you get access to a shower or not. I think it's not entirely clear. Let's hear Steve talk about it.
We're through over there to Veterans Hall on 7th, and now our occupancy is 75. So we have 75 over there. We'll have 50 more coming online at Salvation Army in January. So far we've had about 40 people a night, but with the rain coming at the end of this week, certainly we will be full to capacity, I would suspect, at the VFW, hoping that will hold 75 people.
What exactly does an intake person do, and how long does that process take?
Everybody, because we're a part of the Homeless Management Information System, which is how HUD pays for the continuum of care, of which homeless services is one. We take information about people's houseless history, about their employment history, about some personal information about their employment status. We ask yes or no questions. People say, we said, do you have any drug abuse problems? They say no. We mark no. We don't investigate. Because that's not our function.
Average time for intake is
10 minutes. But once people have done their initial intake, then if they come back the next night or successive nights for the program, they have a number and they don't have to go through the intake process again, so it speeds it along. So we're hoping that this first month of the shelter just being a VFW allow us to kind of refine our intake techniques, so it'll take less time for people to get in, to relax, to be able to have their intake, and then get ready for the first shuttle, which leaves at 5.
Now, this is happening out inside a structure where people can get out of the rain.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you've ever seen the Veterans Memorial Building, Veterans Hall, on 7th Avenue near Rodriguez, but it's kind of a small, narrow storefront if you look at it, but the building goes back, and it's a really wonderful space inside. It's got a small kitchenette. Plenty of room. It's wood paneled.
But that's not where the intake is, right?
The intake is up at 1220 River Street, just past where Homeless Services Center is, but on the other side of the street.
Do people huddle in the cold while waiting to get in?
No, actually, we have two intake waiting rooms, and we also have baggage check, which is run by your good friend Otter, as a matter of fact.
Who?
Otter, Otter from the...
Ah, Sea Otter.
Yeah. So he's doing all of our baggage intake, so people check all their large bags, stuff like that. They can take what they can put in their lap on the bus.
Are little doggies allowed to come along?
Yeah, if you're a service dog, absolutely.
Is there much demand for documentation of service animals?
Not that I've seen so far.
How many people actually end up with their dogs that you've noticed?
I've only seen maybe 3 or 4 out of the 40 people or so that we've had back there.
Is it the same 40 people that keep coming back, or is there a variety?
No, I had 3 new intakes. But the intakes, because people come back excessive nights, there are fewer and fewer new people.
And are you doing this on a 7 days a week basis?
Oh yeah, this is we're going to run for 129 consecutive days.
I mean, are you personally doing?
Oh no, I'm just working Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays.
And have they doubled your salary?
Well, I'm paid through the Associated Faith Communities as a shelter coordinator, but this work we're doing for free.
Do you have anything you wish to add? I'm running out of questions here.
Wonderful action last Saturday at the town clark for justice for Sean Arnold.
The pittance of people that showed up.
It got a good coverage. It was an enthusiastic crowd. And if we continue to go back Saturday after Saturday, maybe it'll amount to something. And I would urge your listeners to come check that out. And
this is a protest against the police refusal to provide documentation of what actually happened to Sean Arnold and Luke Smith. Yeah.
Which will not have happened when you do your show on Thursday. So you can urge people to come, and we need more numbers, but certainly the crowd there was enthusiastic, well covered by the news media, both the Sentinel and KLN. So, you got to keep the, as Steve says, you got to keep the pressure on.
Did they quote you? I know they did quote, they quoted me in the next to the last paragraph.
And they quoted Pat Colby, they quoted Bob LaMonica extensively.
Yes, so Steve argued.
No, I had, in fact, what had happened is that I had an op-ed piece, my op-ed on community programs budget was the featured op-ed in the Sentinel last Sunday. It was the main story.
You're in touch, guys.
Yeah. And so I think they just didn't want to double up and have it, all Steve Plage all the time. It would not have.
But you are running for supervisor in 2018.
2018, absolutely.
Hey, watch out, folks.
You heard it here first. And we've been talking with Steve Plage.
Thank you, Steve.
There you go. Anyway, it was certainly well covered.
And also you added that the warming program is also opening tonight.
Tomorrow night, here, I think.
And have you any sense of how effective that was last year?
I think that for the number of times they had it, it was moderately successful. My position has always been that it's a terrific idea and a wonderful program that needs to be much better supported by the city and county and really needs to have better resources behind it. And I think that if under different leadership, it will be a terrific program.
I think he wants some bagels.
What do you want?
We're talking with
Maxwell Levi.
And Maxwell.
And before we hear from Maxwell, the Warming Center is open tonight, and I believe it's also open tomorrow night. And the way to find that out is to call 211 for those of you who are huddling by a computer and listening to this, unlikely as that may be. Or you have friends who are in that situation, advise them to contact 211. It's I think folks assemble behind Joe's Pizza in the parking lot there and then get either bused or walked to the relevant church. I think one of them is the Red Church and the other is a church on the outskirts. I think there are actually now maybe three buildings. I'm not sure. That's the Warming Center run by, or certainly heavily supported by, Brent Adams. I'm not sure how much he's running it, but he certainly is publicizing it. And during this weather, it's good that somebody is publicizing something. Let's hear some more.
You say it's mellower than it used to be, or was, or sort of?
It seems a little more relaxed, less preoccupied with people less fortunate, quite frankly, a little more self-engaged.
Are you outside yourself?
Yeah, of course.
Any hassles?
Never really, but,
tickets from the police?
I also make a lot of efforts to be
inconspicuous.
Discreet.
Well said. Well, I see you at least are going away with at least a couple of bagels, but without the charming hot food. You might have gotten had you come here earlier.
I was, enjoying this weather. It's not quite as dire as it was last week.
It will be raining at the end of the week.
Yeah, but my spirits are up. And thank you for the brownies.
You are smiling, man.
Yes, I am.
And again, we've been talking with
Levi.
Thanks, Levi.
And last 12 minutes of the program. This is your chance to call in and hear yourself on the stream. And maybe have other people hear you on the archive. Let's see what else we've got to pass on to you. here's yet another interview. I think this happened later in the evening, later on Monday evening.
I'm talking to a man riding a sign and his pooch. What's your dog's name?
Trinity.
And you are?
Al.
And Al, you're leaning against this lamppost near Rosie McCann's and I guess up the street from Forever 21. Hard times?
Yes.
And you're about to make a sign informing folks about that.
Yes. Yep.
And I see your dog is comfortably situated on a rug, sort of, quietly. Service dog?
Yeah.
And how long have you been out tonight?
For 15 minutes or so.
I see you're... You ain't got no gloves, and you're rubbing your hands, or...
Yeah, I'm cracking my knuckles and trying to warm my hands at the same time.
In town long?
This time I've been here for a couple of weeks now, I think.
What do you make of it?
I like it a lot. I'm liking it a lot more this time around. I've been visiting for about the middle of the year I started coming out here. And I'm liking it a lot more now.
Where from?
I'm originally from Ventura. But for the last 3 years, I've been living in the Tri-Counties and in San Francisco, going back and forth, and in Walnut Creek, in the Bay Area.
And what brings you particularly to Santa Cruz? Friends, the climate, some special romantic love?
The ocean, and it's a cool city. I like it a lot. There's a lot of good people here, and it's got a lot of good qualities. A lot of things that I like about other cities.
Night.
Best one that I can think of at this point.
Looks like you're outside. You've been sleeping outside.
Yep, I've been sleeping outside.
Any hassles?
No, nothing significant, no. It's been pretty smooth so far.
Anything you've seen today that you want to pass on to folks out there in the radio land?
Treat others the way you want to be treated. What goes around comes around. Might as well make it good.
Almost forgot. Man, the skateboard about to be run over, but saved by me. So, what is your sign going to say, man?
I'm still figuring it out. I'm trying to get back on my feet, but I'm having hard times. Anything helps. Everything's appreciated.
Is anybody giving you anything?
So far, yes, I've made a little bit of money.
In the last 15 minutes?
No. Not in the last 15 minutes.
Last 15 days, perhaps.
Somebody might have given me these chicken wings. I think it's been longer than 15 minutes, actually, though.
Gotcha. And we've been talking with?
Albert. Or Al. I go by Al.
Thank you, Al. I'm Robert.
Nice to meet you.
So this should be on Free Radio Thursday night.
And Al was freezing his butt off on Pacific Avenue. Although he wasn't wet, it was a dry night that night. I've looked online. Today is Thursday night, and usually there is a city council agenda posted by this time online. But not tonight, apparently. Technically speaking, let's see, Tuesday at 1, Monday at 1, Saturday at 1, Saturday at 1. They only have to post the agenda by Saturday, 72 hours before the city council meeting happens. Usually, the last city council meeting of the year, which is coming up since they don't take one in late December, and they come back second Tuesday in January. The last city council meeting of the year involves, particularly on an election year, there's regular business in the afternoon of some kind. They cram all their last-minute whoop-de-doo on the afternoon agenda. And then in the evening, they have the you were so wonderful speeches, we were so great, goodbye speeches to the city council members who are terming out. That would be Don Lane, Micah Posner, and Pamela Comstock. And the ones coming in, they get to make their this is what I'm going to do, hopes, lies, and flap-flap. That's going to be Sandy Brown, Robert Singleton, and Chris Crone. Also Cynthia Matthews, but she's sort of continuing on, so she gets a chance to, I don't know, does she speak twice or does she not speak at all? I'm not sure what she'll do. That'll be, usually it happens in the evening, and that'll be on, let's see, today is the 8th, so it'll be, I guess, on the 13th. That's the next Tuesday in the evening. Well, approaching the end of the road here, and it's been a sort of a long road without any musical breaks, unfortunately, again, because of combination of equipment and broadcaster failure, but let's not harp on that or linger on that. Let's hear a little bit from Freedom Sleepout 74. That happened 2 days ago. That's the 74th protest against the sleeping ban, the city's anti-homeless law that makes it illegal to fall asleep after 11 o'clock at night, outside or in a vehicle, on any public property and on much private property. Somewhat, I was going to say a unique law to Santa Cruz, but I think Watsonville passed a copycat law. But Santa Cruz pioneered this anti-homeless law, so we must give them ample credit. And all those wonderful progressive city council members over the years who set up very limited social services for some have made it illegal for all to take care of themselves outside at night. Again, it's not something that is entirely unique to Santa Cruz. It's a typical form of bigotry that exists throughout the country and throughout the state. But our job in Santa Cruz is to fight it here. That's what the Freedom Sleepers do every Tuesday by sleeping out on the sidewalk outside City Hall. They've been driven away from the seat of government, the actual City Council courtyard lawn area, when there was a lawn before it was torn out as another disincentive for protesters and homeless people to go away. And still, the Freedom Sleepers come back every Tuesday.
A bunch of folks are here. Some of them checking out their computers. Others just trying to bundle up against the cold.
I need that one back for my identity.
No, I'll give it to you. I'll give it to you. And I was just being shown a camping permit, which I'm about to read here. See how it looks. What do we got here? We got a... This is a sleeping van ticket, and it is 7:15 in the morning. This morning, and Michael here got this ticket. So Mike, anyway, so Mike, here's your ticket back. Here you go. Here's your ticket. Thank you.
Is that clear?
Yo, I made a note of it. You got a couple. Do you know what to do about these tickets, or do you?
Yeah, I would burn those two.
Oh, that's the other one. And you're searching your wallet for another one. Check out the second ticket here. Where did you get this ticket, Mike? Where'd you get this ticket?
Love, you tell me, it's on.
Oh, yeah, I can't say it.
No, wait, it's a verb. It's not a noun.
I don't need all that.
What do we got? We got another one.
Where's the other one?
This one is hard to read. Can't read the damn thing.
I can't either. I can't even read
this. This is from last month, the 18th, so it's an older ticket. And the other one is from... looks like a booking slip, maybe. We got a booking slip here for you. For, wow.
What did I do that time?
September. So
what did I do that time?
You got me trespassing on public property or private property.
Okay, yeah.
So you're a trespasser, you're a sleeper, and you're also...
What's this
what the fuck is this? I can't
what's
tell.
What's this one for?
This one...
I threw away by 8
camping. More. Camping. Sleeping. So it's sleeping after 11 o'clock at night. It was 7 in the morning. You got that. Here's your trespassing booking slip, I guess it is.
Well, I got to get my backpack, but I need the code. That's the code, right?
And if you want to avoid this kind of thing in the future, camping tickets at least, you know, if you call in to the... I'll give you a little flyer about this. Call into the River Street Shelter and you leave your name. Then every 3 days you call and say, I want to be on the waiting list. I want to be in the waiting list. And you don't have to go over there. Just get on their waiting list, and then they will supposedly dismiss all tickets. Here. This is what this is about. Check it out. And any other thoughts you want to pass on, Mike?
I was down there today, but they were too busy. They were not open.
Call this number. Don't wait around. That's not, you're wasting your time to wait around.
Yeah, that's what I did.
You need help. Just call
then
him.
Then I almost got another ticket.
Dawes is right here, right?
We're waiting around.